AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com. AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Happy bye week. Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with my guy, Michael Lev. We'll be joined by Jordan Hamm from Sports 360 AZ later on in the podcast for Big 12 Bonanza. Let's just go ahead and ignore last week's picks and move forward to this week's picks. Should be a fun one later on in the podcast. Like I said, no Arizona football. They are off this week. They're undefeated against bye, so at least they'll get a they won't lose. Let's just say that. But yeah, the Wildcats are taking the week off this week. And then they'll be back next week where they'll hit the road again and play against the Colorado Buffaloes. We are going to start this half of the podcast answering some of your mailbag questions and just kind of going over the current state of Arizona football. But Lev, going into this bye week, Arizona's 4-3 right now. You would feel much better about the Wildcats if they were 5-2. I mean, because going into a bye week, it's almost like you got to enter it with a win. You feel good about it. The vibes are high and you feel like, okay, we're all right. Now you're 4-3 and there's some concerns for Arizona, but Brent Brennan and the positive person that he is looks at this team like, well, there's been so much improvement every step of the way that there's a lot to feel good about, but there are some areas that the Wildcats need to work on. I mean, Lev, I mean, we've talked about it. Just kind of in passing, we heard Brent Brennan earlier in the week talk about keep pounding the rock. Like, even though, yes, Arizona lost to two really good teams, they've been competitive, and if they just stay with it, eventually these close losses are going to turn into close wins. I'm just wondering, is that going to happen this year or is that going to happen next year? But overall, I think this Arizona football team is in a much better position than it was last year. Albeit, you know, 4-3, he could very well be 6-1 or 5-2.
Feels like they're kind of teetering on the edge, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like one way or the other. If those close wins don't happen this year, you wonder if Brent Brennan is going to be around to see them happen next year, right? Like, you know, they cannot lose out. I think they need to get to 6-6 and get to a bowl game to really feel like things are headed in the right direction. That would represent a 2-game improvement over last year and would be only Arizona's second bowl appearance in a span of 8 seasons, right? From 2018 to this year. So that would be a big deal, really important game coming up against Colorado. After the bye, Colorado is at Utah this week. So like the schedule stuff kind of lines up well, right? You're always going to feel beaten up after you go to Salt Lake City. for a game. Meanwhile, Arizona is resting and kind of trying to figure out its run defense problems, how to solve that. I don't know if there's a simple solution. You know, a healthy Trey Smith is not walking through that door, right? And I don't know, is it personnel? Is it scheme? Is it just kind of getting worn down at this point in the season? Is it fundamentals? Probably a combination of all of the above. Are we going to see opponents run QB power against Arizona on a regular basis? I mean, some can. I don't see Colorado doing that. I don't see Kansas doing that necessarily, but I don't know. Maybe they will, because we didn't think Houston was going to do it as much as they did, and it was, you know, very effective.
And Caden Salter, the upcoming quarterback for Colorado, he is not like a Tonka truck like Bear Bachmeyer and Connor Wegman. Like, those guys are like really big body guys. But Caden Salter can use his legs, and he has shown it. So that's something to pay attention to. Like, I really feel like Colorado, they're going to want to expose that. I mean, because it's worked for the last two teams. Why wouldn't it work for Colorado?
It's just such a radical change for them. Like, the QB run game is part of their offense, but they're a little more pro style.
Yeah.
A little bit more, you know, spread the ball out. You know, use their weapons on the outside. Deion Sanders has done a really good job of recruiting wide receiver talent and replenishing that room after losing some elite players. But, you know, plenty of time for us to talk about the Colorado Arizona matchup next week. My guy Justin might have a special story for us in store.
I do.
In relation to the some recent history between Arizona and Colorado.
Well, yeah, that story will actually be out by the time we do another podcast. That'll be already posted. So I appreciate you, Lev, for allowing me to preview that. So I had a chance to talk to Khalil Tate on Spears and Ali on ESPN Tucson this week. And we talked about the scene of the crime at Folsom Field, where he set the single game rushing record for yards by a quarterback. And then we talked about his career post-football. He's on the Fox NFL Sunday kind of spoof skits that they do before their big games. He's also in the TV show All American, which is on CW as kind of like a extra background character. He's been doing some shoots for Rydell and also Nike. He was apparently, I think he was like Kyler Murray in a photo shoot for Nike, or like he did like a commercial as Kyler Murray. So Khalil Tate is a football player. He is just not like actually playing football. But he also said that his acting / modeling career, because he has to stay in shape, he does all of his football workouts. He trains as if he's a football player. And then he also said, like, hey, I'm not giving up on that dream. You know, I really feel like I still have some gas in the tank. But the modeling, acting, and the, you know, the requirements, you know, if you want to be a model football player, you got to really look like a football player. So he's using that as kind of his way to stay in shape. And he's making some money while doing it. He's doing a pretty damn good job. So
I would say if you can make money doing that and not have to get tackled by people, I would probably choose that route. I was thinking as you're saying that, well, what about the indoor football league? You know, maybe come and play for the Sugar Skulls. As a quarterback, like, the quarterback run game is part of that sport.
It
is. Even though the field is so compacted. But again, like, do you want to get all beaten up to do that when maybe you can make just as good of money or more in the acting realm? So Khalil Tate played three games in his career against the Colorado Buffaloes. We know that the first game he rushed for a record 327 yards and four touchdowns, completed 12 of 13 passes. And I think the one incompletion was a drop. And then his highest passing total ever against Colorado in 2019, 404 yards, three touchdowns and one pick. And then in 2018, he merely had 350 yards rushing and tied his career high with five touchdown passes. So I think no fan base was happier to see Khalil Tate run out of eligibility than the fans of the Colorado Buffaloes.
Lev, I tweeted this back in 2019. You reminded me of this. So his stat line in the 3 years that he played against Colorado, He was 60 of 76 passing, which is 78.9%. He also passed for 908 total yards and rushed for 365 yards and had 13 total touchdowns. So
amazing. Just absolutely. It's like one man wrecking crew.
He was, man. But yeah, it was good to chat with Khalil Tate, aka Mr. October. And funny enough, it's actually his birthday this week.
Oh, very nice.
Thursday's his birthday. So yeah, I'll be posting that story. It'll be on Tucson.com probably later in the weekend or early next week. So keep your eyes peeled for that. But
very nice. So, you know, we like to go go retro, get a little nostalgic about certain things. But one of our tweets, our mailbag questions.
Yeah.
Is kind of about going into the past and suggesting maybe we shouldn't do that. So
okay,
good segue into the mailbag, Justin.
Let's do it, man.
Steve Molina,
oh, frequent my
contributor, asks, when will Arizona fans get the F over Jed Fish?
I feel that like this is he's targeting this at me.
So, you know, look, we sort of like to poke fun at Jed Fish and his career path, right? As soon as the Florida and UCLA jobs come open, you know, we are liable as media pundits to tweet something about Jed Fish, you know, maybe being interested in those jobs. We have no idea whether he is or not. Certainly his career pattern suggests that he might be. I think he issued one of those non-denial denials the other day when asked about it. I mean, Steve has said in other posts that he feels like it's actually hurting the Arizona program for us to do this. I don't buy into that at all. I don't think people like, do you think Brent Brennan cares if we tweet about Jed Fish or recruits care if we tweet about Jed Fish? I mean, it's really just in jest for the most part, but I appreciate the question.
Yeah, I really do. Well, yeah. And honestly, like I can kind of see where he's coming from because it's like, okay, you're still bitter about the ex, I guess. And it's like, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I have no feelings towards Jed Fish. He left for the job that he felt like was best for him at that point of his career. Now, my only criticism for him, and it's kind of more so Washington, was like, okay, you didn't need to post a video of you guys walking into his house in Catalina Foothills where you have the Arizona Wildcats sign on the front porch. And it's like you're going in and stealing Jed, you know, overnight, like, and then posting it. That to me just kind of felt like you were rubbing salt in the wound there. So that was my only criticism of Jed going to Washington. But yeah, like you said, Lev, you know, the Florida job opened up and we all know that Jed would walk from Seattle to Florida if he was given that job because that's his dream job. You know, that was, you know, really the place that got his coaching career started, right? Because he was a law student at Florida. Every day would leave sticky notes on Steve Spurrier's car asking for an opportunity and did it for pretty much like half a year until Steve got to the point where he was like, okay, man, well, we'll give you a GA role, even at a time where there wasn't a GA role. And that's how Jed Fish got his coaching career started. And, you know, he's been a journeyman. He's a very well-traveled guy, obviously. And we all knew that when he got to Arizona, okay, this is an NFL guy. He's been at the collegiate level, been at, you know, really good places. Unfortunately, you know, Arizona isn't really the destination for a guy like Jed Fish. It is for Brent Brennan. It is for, you know, a lot of other people. But for a guy like Jed Fish, yeah, that to me, it's not the destination job. So we all knew that he was going to leave eventually. And I thought that he was going to do his thing at Arizona. The Florida job would become open and then he would go leave for Florida, which I think Arizona fans would have been totally okay with. But yeah,
he had still been here. And then the Florida job came open in the middle of the season. And we had to report on that and ask him those questions. That would have been,
man.
Awkward.
And who knows like what Arizona would look like. Cause you know, Damon Williams is the quarterback there. Jonah Coleman would probably still be here. What happens with Noah Fifita? Right.
Is
Noah the starting quarterback for Jerry Neuheisel and Tim Skipper at UCLA right now? Like, or, I don't know.
Maybe at Utah.
Oh, Utah as well. Yeah. He's got an affinity for Utah family ties there. So
they'd be so much better with Noah. All right, so question number two. Remember, these were sent before the Houston game, but I think still relevant. This is from Doug in Tucson. He said, this season alone, Arizona football has had two games delayed by storms, one game played in the scorching sun at noon, and is about to play a 9 a.m. kickoff on their body clocks. Why do the college football gods hate us so?
Great. Because we're talking smack about monsoon. That's why.
It's probably why. Yes. Something karmic in play there. But yeah, it has been one of those kind of seasons, like two storm delays at home, which, I mean, there hadn't been one since, when was the last one? Like
2009. The last time they had a weather delay, Antonio Brown was at Arizona Stadium.
Yeah. Okay. So really long time since that had happened. Look, you're going to get the occasional 9 a.m. kickoff in the Big 12, because that's one of the time slots. There are teams that are in the Central time zone. There are teams in the Eastern time zone. That's just going to happen. I was not a huge fan of playing that Oklahoma State game at noon, but TNT Turner is in the mix for Big 12 games, and they have baseball postseason this time of year. So they have to kind of schedule around that. I did think that that hurt attendance. So let me get your thoughts on that, and then we'll go into the next question, which is sort of related to this topic. But
so why has weather affected Arizona?
Like like in general, like all of the issues that have come up regarding weather, start times, like all seemingly piling on this particular season.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, TV controls everything. And, you know, and that's why Arizona, Colorado, along with five other games, are on the 6-day selection slate. Like TV, those companies, they're trying to see, okay, what's the goods for this upcoming week? Let's wait and see, you know, what the better matchups are. And then we'll, you know, move them and sort them out by kickoff times. Yeah, I agree with you, Lev. Like, as much as I love noon games, as much as I love the early games, we love them because we're in the air-conditioned press box. In October, I totally understand why, you know, some Arizona fans would be put off by the weather. But then again, you know, wear sunscreen, wear a hat, you know, figure out ways to, you know, get out to the game. You know, I wouldn't let the heat totally, you know, take me away from going out to the game. But yeah, the game where it got delayed recently. Was that the BYU game?
BYU, yeah.
Yeah, BYU game. You know, we were talking about, hey, maybe they should move it up.
Yeah.
But then again, like, TV does not care about that. Yeah. Like, I'm sure that BYU and Arizona, I'm sure they would love to, you know, have that game get moved up to avoid the weather getting in the way. Because I'll never forget walking to the stadium that day, Lev. I'm like, I am sweating right now. It is so hot. I thought it was supposed to rain. Like, what the hell is going on? And then the rain came, and it got messy there for a second. And
it rained in Houston too, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Like 30 minutes before kickoff. But you know, that was a very quick shower, and then the sun came out and just made it very Houston-like. It was very gross, and the air was thick, and it was humid as hell. But yeah, I think it's just unlucky for Arizona. But now moving forward, you know, this Colorado game, maybe it's a beautiful day in Boulder in the middle of the afternoon. That's the game that I love. You know, Folsom Field, the mid-afternoon game, that is a really awesome venue. And then Cincinnati, hopefully it's not like a Washington State situation to where
that's going to be the cold game.
Cold and just disgusting. Hopefully it's a mid-afternoon day, and you know, it's kind of nice in Cincinnati. So we'll see. You know, there's five games left. Maybe the weather will be pristine for the Wildcats moving forward.
So when I was watching that Louisville-Miami game on Friday, and they did kind of the blimp shot of Hard Rock Stadium, and they've got the canopies going all the way around, you know, and it's sort of that rectangle that's that opening in the middle. I'm just like, man, can they just do that at Arizona Stadium?
Maybe the
somehow.
Best.
It would be so awesome for the fans. To be able to have some shade in those situations. Speaking of which, Colton Hawthorne asks, I'm not from Tucson. Do you guys know why our fan base is so fickle compared to these other Big 12 towns? Justin, we could do an entire podcast on this topic, couldn't we?
Totally.
Like, first thing I would say, I guess, is Arizona's, it's a basketball school. and a basketball town first and foremost. I would like to think that Arizona is capable of being both. Some schools are both. A lot of the Big 12 schools, I would say, are both. That would, you know, that's why they seem to have better attendance at their games. I had brought up, you know, someone tweeted about Oklahoma State still having good crowds, even though they're terrible. And I said, interesting.
Yeah.
And people said, well, the difference is they've built up goodwill over almost two decades of being a contender, a bowl team, et cetera. Arizona has not had that, right? I mean, you had an era of relative prosperity under Rich Rodriguez, did pretty well under Mike Stoops, but, you know, there have been just as many valleys as there have been peaks.
Totally.
So I think those are factors to be sure. I think that it's fair to say that Arizona football fans are fair weather fans too. And they're just, you know, not going to show up in as big a numbers as some other towns, unless the team is consistently winning. And it has been difficult to achieve that here.
When, like you said, Lev, Oklahoma State had, 17, 18 straight seasons where they finished as a ranked team, or they would go to bowl games and they had multiple top 15 finishes. Like, you could really make a case that Oklahoma State under Mike Gundy was a top 15 program in college football over the last 25 years, right? So, Oklahoma State, their fan base has seen a lot of winning, and they have tradition, and they have a really good culture, even though that the guy who made all that happen is no longer there. And honestly, when you look at Arizona football outside of the Rich Rodriguez era, you know, when they fired Dick Tomey, there were some dark times under John Makovic. And then Mike Stoops had to rebuild over several years. You know, Mike Stoops didn't go to a bowl game until his fifth year at Arizona.
Would that happen? Would that be allowed to happen?
Nowadays? Imagine that kind of patience with Brent Brennan. Is that possible nowadays?
I think, okay. Well, I would say if they weren't coming off that 10-3 season, then maybe so.
Yeah.
You know, like, Mike Stoops did not inherit a team that went 10-3.
No.
That's going to be like, you know, if things don't work out for Brent Brennan, that will be his curse.
Yeah. And when Mike Stoops also took over at a time where there was no transfer portal, you had to rebuild the program the old fashioned way doing some good old recruiting. And then maybe in 3-4 years, maybe you can get it off the ground. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And then Rich Rodriguez inherited the Mike Stoops era players and also added his own, flavor to it. And then Rich Rodriguez was consistent, was very steady. And then outside of Rich Rodriguez, okay, well, they didn't go to a bowl game under Kevin Sumlin. They went to one bowl game under Jed Fish. They had a stinker of a season last year. So if you really take out the Rich Rodriguez chapter, I mean, the last quarter century, it's been pretty rough for Arizona football. So, yeah, it's Arizona football fans. They've seen some rough things, some rough seasons over the past, and I feel like consistency, I think, will get Arizona back in, or get the Arizona football fans back to, you know, going to games. And yeah, I do think that there's something to the tradition of you know, a program like Oklahoma State. But yeah, I will say this though, you know, Arizona, they're not the worst football fan base. You know, Houston, that crowd was kind of bad. And you know what's crazy is apparently some Houston fans were like, no, this is actually like a normal like crowd for us. This is actually kind of decent. The only reason why the Texas Tech crowd was better was because of Texas Tech fans.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because another thing that people pointed out about Oklahoma State is there's really nothing else to do in Stillwater. Okay. Now, Tucson, I would say, is a college town, but it is not a super tiny or isolated college town like some of the others in the Big 12.
Yeah, there's right? more than
this one. Is sort of a sprawling, yes. This is sort of a sprawling metropolis. Houston is a pro town that just so happens to have a couple of college football teams that play there, right? You've got the Rockets, you've got the Astros, you've got the Texans, and then you've got the Cougars and the Rice Owls, right?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different sporting events that you can attend, a lot of ways you can spend your discretionary income in Houston, besides going to see the Houston Cougars play football. All right. I got two more questions. One of them about football and then one of them about basketball as we hit mid-October here. First, AZ Cat John, what does AZ have to do to get Noah, that would be Noah Fifita, to be a willing runner? He gets 50 yards a game and we win out. This was a very pertinent question coming out of that Houston game, because there was one play in particular where Noah did not run the ball. And I don't think it was because he's not afraid of contact or anything of that nature. He just made a bad read in a situation where he should have pulled the ball out and run around the edge. And this was in the second quarter. I think Arizona was down, I was tied at the time, or down 21-14. I don't remember, but maybe down 14-7, something like that. They were in a situation where they maybe really could have regained control of the game if they had gone down and scored. They didn't. Houston gets the ball.
Yeah.
After, you know, getting it on the 4th-and-1 turnover, they go down and score at the end of the half. They win the middle eight. They win the game.
Yep.
I think it's a learning process for Noah to really master Seth Diggy's system. And I'm sure they're working on it, right? During this bye week, but I don't think it's a willingness issue at all. I think it's just reading the play correctly. Yeah. That one, it's easy for us to say, of course, but that one, the defensive end crashed in that situation. You're supposed to pull and run around, and there was nothing but green grass out there if he had done that.
Yeah, and Brent Brennan said that Noah had the option to pull, but it wasn't an RPO.
Right.
Like it was a simple zone read, and Noah even said, he's like, I made a bad read.
Yep.
I should have pulled it, and I didn't, and just missed blocks led by, and you know, coupled with Noah making that bad read, it led to Arizona not converting on fourth down. And Noah's a willing runner because
absolutely,
I've seen him take some really hard hits near the sideline. I also think that Noah has it in his head, and rightfully so. Hey man, you got to protect yourself. You know, you have to make sure that you are, you know, not getting hit all the time. And, you know, sometimes, you know, take that run, or if you feel like you can make, you know, the play with your arm, see what you can do. I think Noah's tough as nails. I just think that right now, as his game evolves, you know, he's more of a runner now than he's ever been in his mm-hmm. career. And I feel like that's certainly going to be a learning curve. As much as he's a veteran and a guy that's played a lot of meaningful snaps as a quarterback, that part of his game is still evolving. And, you know, I'd be really curious to have this conversation a year from now, because a year in Seth's system and, you know, going through that, I feel like Noah next year, it's going to be even better. We're going to see the best version of Noah Fifita. But for now, I think he's continuing to learn how to be a runner, and he's going to get that right.
Third offensive system in 3 years. Have to keep that in mind. Yet true. Another argument for continuity. All right. Yep. One last question from Cat Bus, who is a frequent contributor. This was from last week. The Big 12 preseason basketball poll was released this morning. Arizona has the number 2 ranked recruited class of 2025. Talented returnees, yet no Arizona player was recognized. Are the Big 12 coaches sleeping on Arizona, or is it more of a reflection of the strength of the conference? I would say it's both of those things. I was surprised. I think it was a 10 player team.
Yeah.
Right. And there was no Jaden Bradley on there. Maybe that's because Jaden Bradley is not flashy and doesn't put up like big statistics, but you know what Jaden Bradley does more often than not, way more often than not, he wins.
Yep.
And I also think when this sort of thing happens, it's just fuel for the fire. So, if I were Tommy Lloyd, I would spin that into a positive. Becky Burke is doing the same thing after Arizona was picked to finish 14th in the women's poll in the 16-team Big 12. So fuel for the fire. It's just fuel for the fire. A little more motivation heading into this basketball season, which is underway.
I was surprised to not see Coa Pete either, because if you look at every NBA mock draft, Coa Pete's going to go top 5. And yeah, meanwhile, BYU's AJ DeBonsa, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, he's going to be the number 1 overall pick.
Yeah.
And he was a unanimous selection. So I thought, you know, I didn't expect Koa Pete to come out there and be a unanimous guy, but I feel like he should have gotten some love from Arizona.
Koa Pete's going to be an interesting player to watch this season. I don't think he's a great shooter or scorer necessarily, but he has got a really high basketball IQ. He comes from this athletic family of all of his siblings played college and or pro football or basketball. And I think every stat line you see from him, he's going to have a couple blocks. He's going to have a couple steals. He's going to have assists. He's going to have rebounds. Just that kind of all around game that can help you win. And even though he's not a great shooter, I love him in that high post position where you're almost kind of a point forward. I think even though he's a freshman, you're going to see a young basketball player who makes a lot of good decisions with the basketball in his hands.
You're right, though. Tommy Lloyd's totally going to use this as fuel for this team. And, you know, just from talking to Tommy Lloyd, you know, he's one that's not really to pound his chest, but he's like, oh, just wait.
Yeah.
You're going to see really how good this basketball team is. And I feel like, you know, right now, Arizona goes into this season ranked number 13 in college basketball. And I feel like if things go right and this team reaches its potential, this could be a top three team in the country. I feel like you can't lose in this situation for Arizona because you have such a hard schedule that, I mean, heck, you have an exhibition game against St. Mary's. Even your exhibition games are kind of hard. I feel like this is only going to get them battle-tested for March. And, you know, let's say things click and the freshmen are awesome and guys like Jaden Bradley and they all mesh together and they start winning games. It's like, okay, best case scenario, you're the best team in college basketball. Worst case, you're still built and battle tested to go deep in March. So
I think this team has a really high ceiling and there's going to be some ups and downs over the course of the year because they are so young. But as long as you peak at the right time and you stay relatively healthy, I think the outlook is very promising for this squad. Like, I think just pure talent wise, it's as good of a team as Tommy has had. And his first team, you know, had, you know, three NBA players on it. So that's pretty high praise if that's the case.
Including Lakers legend, Christian Coloco. All right, let's get to Big 12 Bonanza, everyone's favorite segment that we do every single week. And we've got our guy joining us here. The one, the only, Hambone, Jordan Ham. What's going on, man?
How are we doing, fellas?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
All
Jordan,
right.
You know why Jordan's in such a good mood? Because he went a very solid 3-3 against the spread last week. Which
gentlemen's 3-3.
I mean, I feel like I would take that any given week, especially when you consider that both Justin and I were 1-5.
Ooh.
Yeah, and my 1-5 follows a 2-5, so we're in a slump over here at Lev HQ. We got to figure out a way out of this thing.
Yeah. Are you going to start like burning sage or something like that?
I wouldn't rule out anything, honestly. I'm desperate. Thanks to Jordan's 3-3 week, he is now just one game back in the season-long race against the spread at 29-30. Justin at 30-29. I'm way back there at 26-33. And the rookie is also only one game back straight up at 41-18 behind Justin at 42-17. And I am at 40-19.
Okay.
So we'll see what things look like this week. You guys ready to get started?
Let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Okay. We begin with the game called the Sunflower Showdown between Kansas State and Kansas. This game is at 9 a.m. This is the TNT game. This game is in Lawrence, and the Jayhawks are favored by 2.5. Did you know, fellas, that Kansas State has won 16 games in a row in this rivalry, and that Kansas has not won since 2008? Whoa, I was blown away when I saw that. But I will note that the last 2 years, very close games, 29-27, 31-27. Both of these teams are coming off byes. You know, Kansas State is 3-4, which none of us expected. Their four losses are by 3, 3, 6, and 1 points. So a total of 13 points in those four defeats. Kansas' last three, home loss against Cincinnati, barely survived against UCF and then got absolutely trucked by a then healthy Texas Tech. Kansas is 16th. That would be last in the league in rushing defense. However, doesn't look like Dylan Edwards is going to play for Kansas State, which has kind of been a season-long theme. I feel like he's kind of the new Cam Rising in a way, a little bit. Yep. Like, it's just every week, like, is he going to play? Is he not? And, you know, the fact that he's not seems problematic. I'm going to go with Kansas in this one to end the streak. I just feel like this is home field advantage. This is the first Sunflower Showdown in the refurbished David Booth Stadium, the Booth. And I think that's going to be the single biggest factor in a game that's otherwise pretty even. If the spread had been 3.5, I might have gone the other way. But give me the Jayhawks and lay the 2.5.
So the last time that Kansas beat Kansas State, they were led by Mark Mangino. Is that correct? Back in 2008, their old coach that took him to the Orange Bowl. Okay. Well, Mark Mangino is going to be very, very happy wherever he is.
You're correct on that, Justin. Yes.
Okay. Well, Mark Mangino is going to be very happy because then he's going to see his Kansas Jayhawks beat Kansas State this week. Yes, I know that Kansas, they got absolutely whacked by Texas Tech, but Texas Tech is maybe the best team in the Big 12 despite tripping up on the road against ASU this past weekend, which is a huge win for the Sun Devils. That was a statement victory for Kenny Dillingham and company. But with that being said, Jalen Daniels, 27 of 33 passing for 255 yards and 2 touchdowns in that loss. Yes, I know they got smoked, but Jalen Daniels, I thought, was pretty solid for the most part. Coming off a bye week, I feel like Kansas, they should be in really good shape to win this game. So I'm going with Kansas to win.
At halftime, this Texas Tech-Kansas game was 21-17. So, you know, Kansas was there, and then Texas Tech kind of remembered what they were and kind of ran off with it. I called for that to be a Jalen Daniels legacy game. I think I might have been a game too early. I'm going to have this be the one where Jalen goes ahead, gets a marquee win, first time in a very, very long time that Kansas beats Kansas State. So I'm going to lay the points and pick Kansas.
Yeah, if this happens, Kansas State will be 3-5, which is shockingly bad. And then I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they play Texas Tech next week. So yeah, they do. So, you know, if they lose this game, they'll be really be right on the edge of even making a bowl game, which is would be a shocking outcome for a team that was considered, you know, one of the co-favorites heading into this season. Okay. Game number two on the slate this week, 12:30 window. This is number 11 BYU at Iowa State. This game is on Big Fox. BYU is the underdog in this game, getting 3.5 points, kind of reminiscent of when Iowa State was ranked and went to Cincinnati, and Cincinnati was favored in that game. Cincinnati ended up winning. Significant news on the injury front in this game. Iowa State is going to get Kyle Conrady back. That's their kicker. They basically ran out of kickers in their last game against Colorado, and it really kind of messed things up. They had to go for it on fourth down, do some, you know, unconventional stuff. He is, when healthy, probably the best kicker in the league. So that's a big factor. Looks like Carson Hansen's going to be back. So that gives them their 1-2 punch in the backfield. Dominic Orange, the big defensive tackle, the big citrus, he is questionable for this game. So that is definitely something to watch. It would be really nice to have a guy like that against the power rushing tandem of LJ Martin and Bear Bachmeier, right?
Yeah.
Here's my thing about this game. Like, how many weeks in a row can BYU be up and sustain this type of intensity? Like, double overtime game at Arizona, come back home, the holy war, which, you know, goes down to the end, the most emotional game that you're going to play all season long if you're BYU. Like, can they sustain that level of focus, intensity, all of those things going on the road to an Iowa State team coming off a bye? I don't like that spot at all for BYU. I'm going to take the Cyclones and lay the 3.5.
But then you also got to think, man, weather delay as well. Like, that game wasn't really normal. I mean, you could make a case, maybe the weather delay allowed Arizona to get back into that game, right? And then the Holy War, that's an ice bath game, man. That's such a physical, mm-hmm. physical game. I look at it like this. I totally get what you're saying, Lev. But the reason why I'm picking BYU to win this game, which should set up, you know, College Game Day to go to their game against Texas Tech. But BYU, they are top 15 in college football with a +6 turnover margin. They're also top 15 with an average time of possession of 32 minutes and 48 seconds. So winning the turnover battle, running the ball effectively, that travels, that showed on the road against Arizona. I think it does it. They replicate it once again. And I think BYU will dominate, I'm not going to sit there and say they're going to win by a couple of touchdowns, but I feel like it's going to be a very BYU win and they get it done on the road.
Lev, you took a lot of the points right out of my mouth of just emotional win after emotional win. You're going up against Texas Tech the next week. We haven't seen many Bear Bachmeyer freshman moments. I think we're just due for one. Iowa State is a tough place to play. So I'm going to take Iowa State and the points. Or lay the points.
Lay the points. Okay. Yeah. All right. So the next game on the docket is a 1 p.m. window, Oklahoma State at Texas Tech. This game is on ESPNU. And the spread in this game, Justin is laughing, is 38.5 points. I don't want to give away the ending here, but I'm going to take Texas Tech and lay the 38.5 points, even though Baron Morton is questionable. Doesn't matter at all. Oklahoma State, they were actually a little bit frisky last week, you know, against Cincinnati. They were only down 28-17 entering the fourth quarter, got outscored 21-0 in the fourth, and that included a 100-yard interception return. So they were kind of right there. Doesn't matter. Texas Tech's going to be super pissed off after losing that ASU game. This game is at home. The yardage in this game is going to be like 800 to 150. Like whatever, remember what Oregon did to Rutgers last week, like 750 total offense, going to be something like that. The score is going to be something like 69-3, which was the outcome of the Oklahoma State Oregon game earlier this year. So as ridiculous as it is, I will lay the 38.5 points and take Texas Tech.
Man, I'll never forget whenever I would mess up on like picking up a linebacker at second level, and then my coaches would just rip me a new one and yell at me. And then the next play, I would just take out all my frustration on the poor scout team, underclassmen defensive linemen. And I feel like this is exactly what's going to happen in this game. Like, I feel like Texas Tech is just going to totally just whoop up on Oklahoma State. And, you know, Rick Pitino said it all the time when he was the coach of the Boston Celtics about so-and-so is not walking through that door. You know, Justin Blackman is not walking through that door. Brandon Whedon is not walking through the door. Barry Sanders is not walking through that door. I feel like this is going to be just an absolute ass kicking. I'm going with Texas Tech to win and win big.
I'm going to zag a little bit. I'm going to pick Oklahoma State to get their big win and upset. No, I'm joking. Texas Tech is going to win this, but I'm viewing this a little bit like, yes, they are probably very pissed about the way that last Saturday went down. But they also have BYU coming up. So do they get up 28 and then let the second team come in? And this is more of a body maintenance game. Like, just take care of business. Everybody, let's be fresh for BYU. So 38.5. Is this – can we track what the biggest spreads are for two Power Four programs? Because this has to be right up there.
Totally.
There would be a way to figure this out. I can't do it on the spot.
I'm sure Brian Peterson.
Brian Peterson could, but he's in Hawaii right now visiting his daughter, so I'm not going to bother him to look that up. But it's a good question.
Yeah. Hey fellas, real quick, how do we feel about the tortillas getting banned? Did you guys see that?
I mean, look, you want to do it before the game, that's fine. But no one should be throwing anything on the field ever. Sorry, it's just I understand it's this tradition or whatever. There's got to be a way to control it. I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's a very responsible response. Mine was going to be like, oh, like, you know, like it's college football. What are you going to do? They should do where like, let them get it out at like halftime too, where it's like, you know, the ASU basketball would always do like the teddy bear toss at halftime where it's like, you know, for charity and all that stuff. So
Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
But the Oklahoma State Bananas, that's my favorite thing in college football right now, next to Pudge the Cat.
If so, they weren't so awful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this joke like really landed or not, but I did write in my last column, I wrote one item about the tortilla tossing situation. And I said at the end, things were so much simpler when the only options were corn or flour. I don't know if that joke works or not.
Not me.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. If you're into dad jokes, then maybe so. Okay. And that was in reference to the fact that there was an accusation by Lance Leipold that they threw a pocket knife onto the field as well. And then they actually looked through the film, right, and determined that that was not the case. That had like fallen out of the pocket of one of the Kansas assistant coaches or something. So anyway, that's what led to my joke about corn and flour.
Got my whistle, got my pocket knife. I'm ready to go coach.
You never know. You might need to cut tape off of somebody's body or something, right? True. Justin.
True. Very true.
You've been there.
Then you get like, they have like these like box cutter looking things. That they
no, use. That's true.
That's very efficient. True. But anyways,
good point. All right. We have one more game in the 1 PM window. This is Baylor at Cincinnati. This game's on ESPN2. When I sent the lines out, Baylor was getting 4.5 points against Cincinnati. This is homecoming for the Bearcats. Bryson Washington, day-to-day for Baylor. So that's bad news. They kind of came back in that twice-delayed game against TCU last week. Can you imagine having two weather delays in one game, Justin?
Man.
Ouch. And they actually got to the point where, you know, they were down by 6. They tried an onside kick. Yardage was pretty even in that game, but Baylor just, I don't know. They just have a tendency to hurt themselves. 6 for 17 on third down. They threw 3 interceptions in that game. Ouch. Meanwhile, Cincinnati's over here at 6-1, the number 21 in the country. As mentioned, they kind of messed around a little bit at Oklahoma State last week before pulling away. These two teams are in the top 5 in the league in both scoring and total offense. So you kind of expect a shootout type of game. Man, I was so tempted to pick Baylor in an outright upset here. But I just don't trust them enough to do that. I'm going to take the points at 4.5 and say Cincinnati squeaks by. They kind of have to me that little bit of a 2024 ASU feel to them, where like most of their wins are by one score. And I'm actually going to have a good stat on that a little bit later, but give me Cincinnati to win on homecoming, but barely. Baylor covers the 4.5.
We might be on Dave Aranda hot seat watch over the next few weeks. Cause you know, they've got this one coming up against Cincinnati. And then they also have one against Utah as well. And then they got to play the Arizona Wildcats. So keep an eye on that. You know, I know there's a lot of coaching movement happening this season. Maybe Baylor joins that conversation. We'll see. But I look at it like this. Cincinnati has 3 guys that are in the top 16 of rushing yards in the Big 12 this year, including their quarterback, Brennan Sorsby. They also have a couple of really good running backs as well. And Baylor, they're 3rd to last in rushing defense. So at home, I think Cincinnati runs the ball. And I think they take care of business. Give me the Bearcats to win and win big.
I'm going against you guys. I'm going to pick old Baylor. You look at some of these losses, you know, the TCU game, the score is probably closer than it really was, but 6 points, you know, you win by 1 against Kansas State, you lose by 3 a couple weeks ago to Arizona State. Like, they've just been in it. And I'm looking for Cincinnati to have that lull and Big 12. It just feels like, you know, for some of these games, you look ahead and it's just like 1 + 1 doesn't always equal 2 in these games. And I feel like this is just kind of one where Sawyer Robertson maybe just throws all over them and, you know, very high scoring affair. Yes, Baylor needs to play some really, really good defense against this rushing attack for Cincinnati. But I just have something in my gut that just tells me like Baylor's due for just kind of a upset that puts them back in the conversation, just mucks up the top of the rankings for the Big 12. So I'm going to take the Bears.
I was so close to going there. So close. Speaking of which, TCU at West Virginia, this game's at 3 PM. This is an ESPN Plus game. The Horned Frogs are favored by 15.5 points at Morgantown. And man, so tempting to take Rich Rod as a big home dog. Did you guys know this is only West Virginia's fourth home game? They've played three home games so far. They're 2-1 at home. They're 0-4 on the road. TCU is 5-2. Both losses in the conference. They lost at ASU and at KSU. Like, nothing to be ashamed about, to be sure. You know, last week, Kavorian Barnes rushed for over 100 yards. Jordan Dwyer caught over 100 yards worth of receptions. They have a lot of weapons on that team. I really wanted to take the 15.5 points here, but this is one of those, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me situations. I very much regretted that West Virginia UCF pick last week. All the numbers pointed toward UCF, and I stubbornly took the points just because of Rich Rod and his coaching and all of that. I do think Rich Rod's a great coach. I think this team stinks, and they are in a rebuilding mode, and they are barely above the Oklahoma State level, honestly, if you look at all of the numbers. So even though with young quarterbacks, they might be more comfortable at home, I'm not going there. I'm going to lay the 15.5 and take TCU to win and cover.
West Virginia plays well at home, but Josh Hoover, the last three games, 10 touchdowns, two interceptions. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. And I feel like they're going to muck it up and make it, you know, a very interesting game. But I think in the end, TCU prevails. So I'll go with the Horned Frogs, but give me West Virginia to cover.
As I'm looking at this, Josh Hoover has accounted for just 200 less yards than the entire West Virginia offense as a whole. So I just think it's so hard to gauge like what this West Virginia team is and where they're going. And they've had a bunch of injuries. One of the worst, like I said, one of the worst offenses. I think just Josh Hoover's going to throw all over him. So I'll lay the points and take TCU.
Yeah. So Rich Rod said in media interviews this week that he feels like he might have misevaluated some of the players that they brought in via the transfer portal. He also referenced hard edge. We know that saying. And he said that it might take longer than I thought for us to achieve the hard edge. He also hinted at an offensive line shakeup, saying like, you know, doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity. So I don't know. We'll see. That just seems like a lot of uncertainty, a lot of variables for a West Virginia team that, I mean, they might have one like game in them toward the end of the year where they upset someone. I just don't think it's this week. So yeah, I think we all think TCU. Justin's going to take the points though.
Yeah,
so
we'll
see what happens. All right. 5 PM window, Houston at ASU. This game is on ESPN2. It's a big breaking news today out of ASU. Jordan Tyson, superstar wide receiver, if not the best wide out in the conference, then, you know, 1A maybe behind Eric McAllister. He's out for this game after hurting his hamstring in the fourth quarter last week against Texas Tech. That is a big, big deal. How big a deal is that, Jordy, and what impact do you think that might have on the ASU offense?
It's pretty massive. You know, like, as you said, Jordan Tyson has been the go-to for Sam Levitt the last 2 years. And he has really shown what he can do, already 9 total touchdowns on the year. He got hurt and still played through it, but you could tell he was running at about 70%. They had a massive 4th-and-2 conversion on the their final drive that gave them the lead, where he got out in a little bit of space, but you could tell he wasn't quite right speed-wise. Kenny Dillingham said this about Sam Levitt against Utah. He's saying it this week about Jordan Tyson. Like, he kind of needs to save Jordan from himself. So he's probably good enough to go, but maybe not at a high level. And it's, we're going to sit you. Hopefully you're back next week or in a couple weeks. ASU has found ways to get around that. You know, late last year, they had some wide receivers step up. I think the thing that's working in ASU's favor is this past week against Texas Tech, it was Sam Levitt's best passing performance, and he spread the ball around the best I've ever seen him spread it. seven total receivers got catches, and many of them had multiple catches where it was just kind of quick pass. And part of the reason they put that in was Sam's ankle or, lower leg probably wasn't 100%. So it was like, let's just try to take out the Texas Tech pass rush as much as we can. And so it was a lot of quick passing. Jaron Hamilton had a great game, but they're going to need a lot of guys to step up. And I think that's the approach they need to go. It can't just be, you know, all of a sudden Derek Eusebio is getting 12 targets or things like that. Like they really need to spread the ball around if they still want to, you know, kind of hit the stride that they've been hitting offensively.
If you look at their season totals for passing targets, Jordan Tyson has a massive target share, 39%, 90 out of 231. The next highest player is 31. Even in that game, he had 16 targets and the next highest guy had six, but they did have two guys with six, another guy with five, another guy with four. So to your point, a better job of spreading the ball around.
It's also been that drastic early in the year that when we saw that, it was like, oh, what a pleasant surprise. And you read off the numbers, it's still like a gargantuan total between the two.
Right. So we saw Houston last week, Justin, up close and personal. The biggest kind of surprise for me coming out of that game was that Arizona had zero sacks and only seven individual defensive pressures against a Houston offensive line that had been pretty terrible in pass blocking coming into that game. I don't know if they figured something out or if Arizona just has kind of run out of tricks and run out of bodies to generate a pass rush. I think that is a critical matchup in this game. I can also see, you know, ASU kind of trying to replicate the game plan against Texas Tech of possessing the ball. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that was a big, I'm like, why didn't Texas Tech have more rushing yards? Well, ASU had the ball like most of that game. Like Kenny Dillingham, I think, is really good with his week to week game planning. And he's able to, you know, hey, maybe we just need to run the rock this particular week and really squeeze the other team's offense by not letting them have the ball. That, of course, worked for Houston last week, big time. Against Arizona, which couldn't get them off the field. ASU also has a couple weird tendencies. Like they're 14th in the league in third down offense, third down conversion rate. They're last in red zone touchdown percentage. So, and that's, you know, enabled like last week, right? That's how Texas Tech is still in the game.
Totally.
Right. Settling for field goals. And I mentioned before one score game. So ASU, they're 3-0 this year in the Big 12 in one score games. They were 5-1 last year. So in conference games, since they came into the Big 12, they're 8-1 in one score games. Jordy, why do you think Kenny Dillingham's team is so good in these one score games?
I think they're really good at kind of grounding themselves. A lot of times also, especially last year, they weren't having to play catch up. They would get a lead and then kind of squander it at times. Or like survive a late comeback. So a lot of times they were in the driver's seat where the defense just had to come up with a big play, a big turnover, and they would do that. But I mean, they're really battle tested in, hey, we need a big moment. Hey, we have 2 minutes. Texas Tech just took the lead for the first time all day. Let's go march down the field. So I think that that's something they practice a lot, but also it's just been kind of trial by fire. The past couple, or really the last 2 years, for this team.
So the spread in this game is 7.5. When you factor in the Jordan Tyson injury, the potential for an emotional letdown for ASU, and I think the fact that Houston might have a bit of a chip on its shoulder, like, why isn't anyone talking about us? Why aren't we ranked in the top 25? We're 6-1. Our only loss is against Texas Tech. I'm going to take the Cougars to cover the spread. ASU to continue the pattern of close one-score wins in the Big 12. So give me ASU, but give me Houston plus 7.5. Justin.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that ASU is going to win this game, but Houston will keep this interesting. And I think that they will try to figure out a way to dominate time of possession and keep Sam Levitt and that offense on the field. One thing that I found very interesting, Jordan, do you know when the last time ASU lost a home game?
It wasn't it the teacup in 2023?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 2023 Territorial Cup. ASU does not lose at home. So they'll win, but Houston will make it interesting.
Yeah, I kept my pick out even after the news of Tyson and a couple other injuries that I'll go over here in a sec. But I think ASU wins it, but I think Houston covers. This is just the way this team lives right now, is just in very, very close football games. And Houston's a really good team, and I think they'll try to play as mistake-free football as they can and be right there at the end. But we talked about Tyson. Jordan Crook, arguably their best linebacker, is also questionable. That's what Kenny said today, as well as the two safeties, Boogie Wilson, who has played, I said earlier this week, he's the MVP of the defense because he stepped in for an injured X Alford, and they really haven't missed a beat. And a lot of times when there's a turnover, Boogie is involved in some sort of way. Also fitting that his given name is Adrian. So we have an Adrian Wilson at safety in Arizona, just flying around. But him and Ghost Rouser are also pretty beat up. So this is a team last year, they didn't have to face too many injury issues. And even when they did, it was like Sam Levitt missed one game. Cam Scataboo missed one game. Jordan Tyson missed the tail end of the teacup and then, you know, Big 12 championship and the Peach Bowl. But for the most part, they were pretty healthy. And this has been a really beat up team. Last week against Texas Tech, they had a walk-on at center who played his tush off, Poole. So there's a lot that kind of goes into this, but I think that ASU is going to be able to sustain. One matchup I'm really looking forward to seeing is Thomas, the wide receiver for Houston, going up against Keith Abney, who's just playing out of his mind right now and really has – I think everybody anticipated he'll probably come back for next year, but he might be playing his way up draft boards that he may be an early departure for ASU.
Yeah, this sure feels like a sandwich game or a look-ahead game, especially with Iowa State coming up next for ASU. Okay, last game on the docket. This is Colorado at Utah, 7:15 p.m. on ESPN. That feels like prime time, if you know what I mean. Like, it seems like the Deion Sanders-led Buffaloes are always in that exact same time slot on the worldwide leader. So Devin Dampier is questionable for this game. Has some sort of an ankle or leg issue. Do you guys know the name of Utah's backup quarterback?
I remember watching him run over ASU's defense in the fourth quarter, but I think number 15. I don't know his name, though.
Yeah, that would be Bird Ficklin. Jamarian Bird Ficklin, who was a offseason flip from Texas State, decorated quarterback from the state of Oklahoma. In mop-up duty, he's 9 for 9 for 138 yards, 17 carries for 111 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I actually think that this might be an upgrade for them if he plays. I have been thoroughly underwhelmed by what I've seen from Utah's offense in the two games that I've watched closely. Now, granted, those games were against Texas Tech and BYU, which might be the two best teams in the league, but they just, it's a gimmicky offense. Like, they have no pocket passing game whatsoever. Seems like every downfield pass is like a 50-50 ball down the sideline. There's been no, like, they haven't had anything over the middle of the field with Devin Dampier quarterback. I think we all thought coming into the season, this is going to be an amazing fit. There's a lot of numbers that would say that I'm completely wrong about this, but eyeball test, I am just not seeing it with Dampier at QB. So I will be very interested to see what this looks like if he can't play and the true freshman Bird Ficklin is in there at quarterback for Utah. On the other side, you know, Colorado coming off a bye, they beat Iowa State in their last game at home. The crowd rushed the field, kind of a big to do. One of the biggest wins of Deion Sanders' tenure. Caden Salter, 312 yards of total offense in that game, didn't turn the ball over. That's been a big thing. Like, when he does turn the ball over, it's trouble. When he doesn't, Colorado has a chance. I was super tempted, guys, to actually pick Colorado to win this game outright. Like, I think it's possible. I just couldn't pull the trigger. So I'm going to take Utah to win, but I think Colorado keeps it really close. I think this is going to be a one score game. So I will happily take the 13.5 points.
Yeah. I was right there with you, Lev. Like, I want to pick Colorado to win, but then I look at the location. Location matters, and the fact that they're playing at Rice-Eccles Stadium, Utah coming off a very emotional loss. Colorado, they're going to be ready for this game because they're coming off a bye week. They're going to be rested and recovered. They're not overlooking this opponent to look at the Arizona Wildcats. So Colorado is going to be all in on this game, but I can't do it. So give me Utah to win, but I got the Buffaloes covering.
I promise y'all, I am not a Deion hater. Like, I really like him, and I think he's good for college football. I don't know if I've picked Colorado once this year in any way, shape, or form. And I'll look at the matchups and just be like, I don't see it. And he's obviously proved me wrong here a couple times throughout the year. But Utah still has a great defense. Utah still can control, what the offensive line, the defensive line, even if Dampier isn't where they need him to be. And so I'm going to take Utah and lay the points, go a little bit different. And like I said, I've watched Colorado. There are times that they look pretty good. But every time I get that text from Lev of here are the lines, I'm always just like, I think I'm going against Colorado again. So I'll just stay consistent and go Utah.
I just looked it up. You picked them to win one time against Wyoming, but you took Wyoming with the points.
The cover, yeah.
We all got burned on that one, except I think Justin might have had Colorado to cover. That was the late Caden Salter beat the spread, bad beat touchdown. Very intriguing matchup in this game between John Henry Daly, the defensive end for Utah, who has 9 sacks, second most in the conference, and Jordan Seaton, the elite left tackle for Colorado. He has a 94.7 pass blocking grade per PFF. I mean, that is about as good as you can get. So fun matchup in that one. And sort of a good schedule situation for Arizona with Colorado having to go to Utah and the Wildcats being on bye.
Absolutely, man. We'll look ahead at that game next week during that episode of the Wildcast podcast. That's Jordan Hamm, our guy from Sports 360 AZ. Jordy, we always appreciate you joining us every single week, man.
Appreciate you both.
Also, check us out and all of our Arizona football coverage on Tucson.com. Also, the Wildcaster mobile app. And also, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and comment the Wildcast on Apple and Spotify. See y'all next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com. AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.